Also, today, another state fair note, if I may. This year's Governor's Blue Ribbon Livestock Auction is today. The reception starts at 5 p.m., followed by the auction at 6:30 p.m. Last year, drumroll, the 2023 Governor's Blue Ribbon Livestock Auction raised. Mark Cass just joined us from Team Lammy. I'm gonna quiz you on this. Yes. How much did...
All right, I think I know this. I was just on a tour recently. I know.
We're going to have to get your insights on
but
your
upwards,
VIP
I'm
tour.
Thinking around $80,000.
Oh, Mark.
Higher?
Higher.
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 150.
Higher.
225.
The 2023 wow. Governor's Blue Ribbon Livestock Auction last year, yeah. right here at Wisconsin State okay. Fair, raised... $403,150.
Oh, I thought you were talking about just the number one, not yeah. the. Oh, you tricked
the
me.
Entire auction. Wait, that's right. I want to give you all the.
I need an auditor here for the rules on that. I'm talking about the number one cow that went. I think it was around $80,000.
Okay, right.
It might have been to Meyer, or to. They can say, but either way, that's a whole lot of hamburgers. Let's be honest.
Indeed. All that money going to youth and scholarships, yes. which is amazing.
It's an awesome event. I don't know if you've ever been able to be there. I have. It's a cool event. It's great for kids, and they raise a ton of money.
Yes, and tomorrow on the show, Anna DeWert, who is the executive director of the Wisconsin State Fair Foundation, will join us. She'll have some insights on how the fair raises money constantly throughout the year, but also... They run the milk booth now, which yeah. I'm going to volunteer there on
yeah.
Saturday. I'm going to be selling milk and raising
so
money.
I got to come with, I love that milk booth.
Yeah.
I mean, the strawberry milk, phenomenal. Caramel, they got to go. Herb Cole's kind of legacy lives on there. It's really cool. I was over there the other day. There was a long line. And everyone still knows Herb's name. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's a wonderful legacy to continue, and it's great to see the State Fair Foundation making that happen this year. So as we do every other Wednesday on the show, it's the business of sports with Mark Cass. He's the Senior Vice President and Chief Content Officer at Team Lammy. Also, we have a special guest, Tom Hughes, who's the General Manager at the Milwaukee Athletic Club in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. So first, Mark, we have about, we have a ton of time before right. we have to get to news, but I do want to hear about yeah. your VIP tour from yesterday.
Yeah.
Give us about a 10-second tease.
Yes. Let's see. I held a pig. I went on stage. I tried to be like foreigner. Saw some cows, saw some horses. It was a great time. Now, really good trip through John Yuengling, who's the chairman of the board out here. It's a famous tour. So for those of you who have the opportunity to actually have one of these at an auction, you should grab it because it was a great 3 hours of my life.
Our State Fair VIP, Mark Cass, yeah. joins us with Tom Hughes, who is the GM at the Milwaukee Athletic Club. We'll come back and talk the business of sports and more. Welcome back to The Upswing. We are live from the Wisconsin State Fair, broadcasting in the Bank 5-9 studios. I'm joined today, as we are every other Wednesday, it's the business of sports. Mark Cass, Senior Vice President and Chief Content Officer at Team Lammy. And we have a special guest, Tom Hughes, who's the General Manager of the Milwaukee Athletic Club, the MAC in downtown Milwaukee. We'll be talking about the future of private clubs, the membership model, and kind of the continued innovation in that private club space that's still really vibrant in the greater Milwaukee area. But first, Mark,
yeah.
I need to get your thoughts on what you're seeing from marketability and sponsorship in this year's Olympics. Are there any athletes that are really standing out that you think are just primed for big sponsor deals post-Olympics?
You know, there always are, Jeff. There's great stories at the Olympics. Think about it over the years, all the people who won all these medals and, great stories. I think we saw it last night. You and I were just talking about it with the 1500.
Yeah.
You know, he won that race there. Hocker is his name, right?
Yeah.
Who won that
Cole
race
Hocker.
At there. And think about that story. Or the guy with the glasses. And I can only think of his name, but of course I can think of the glasses.
Right.
At the gymnastics, and he's already seeing some inquiries. I mean, it's long term. When you win at something like that, and you're the best in the world at a sport, you will attract sponsors, and it's long term. I mean, I use the example all the time of Bonnie Blair, who obviously still lives in our community, very active, won 7 medals. You know, I think it was 88 and 92, but is still incredibly well known here. We still use her for events. People still want to hear her talk about her thing. And I just still remember about 3 or 4 years ago, I actually had her an event. She brings the gold medal. And there's nothing like having one of those in your hand and in a room. you know, I tried to sneak out with it. I'll be honest. You know, I was like, hey, look at me. I'm wearing a gold medal. You know, I'm not sure what I want it for, but you know, it's, I mean, that thing can really attract sponsors and makes you marketable. And, you know, I mean, I think the key is how do they perform, but also how do they act?
Yeah.
You know, kind of, are they humble? Kind of, what's the message and a story? I mean, I think we've seen some great stories out of the Olympics this year.
Yeah, I mean, you package all that, you can get some really creative, unique sponsorships that, like you said, could last for years and years. I mean, in terms of the medals themselves, I think one thing that, you know, maybe is lost a little bit is that, obviously, the IOC does not give out prize money for winning medals, but several of the companies do reward their athletes with medal bonuses. Some of the top cash prizes, you look at Hong Kong, leads with $768,000 per gold medal.
Think
it's almost $1 million for a gold medal.
Think about some of our athletes who've won six of those this game, five or six medals this game, and they're walking home with $6 million. All of a sudden, all of us are thinking, we should have went into the Olympics, right?
Right.
I'm sure I could have done, Tom, I'm sure you could have done something in the Olympics, right?
That's right. Singapore?
Nothing. He's got nothing.
Singapore does $745,000 per medal. U.S. gold medalists get $38,000. But that's just for the winnings at there. But you're going to monetize long-term with
no
the sponsorship
doubt.
And the marketing deals.
And think about how many athletes have returned this year to be like the announcers. You've heard them all over all the sports. And, of course, NBC's, I mean, all of them are not there for free. They're getting paid for that. So it's a great investment in yourself. It's a great investment in your career. And it will pay off long-term. I mean, I just can't think of anybody who hasn't benefited from winning a gold medal.
Yeah, you look at just like from the swimming lens, Caleb Dressel.
Oh yeah,
his net worth is already $5 million
and he's an amateur,
right?
Quote unquote amateur,
right? I mean, he's got income from the International Swimming League. Obviously, it's defunct now, but it's called Cali Condors, and he has big sponsorships from Toyota, Coke, Speedo, and Hershey's.
Well, even think of, Jeff, you have to think of what's going to happen right after the Olympics. You're going to see a number of these athletes are going to head out on tours for all the gymnastics. At the end of September, we'll be in Milwaukee on a tour. Now, again, that's not free. They're all getting paid to be there.
Yeah.
So it is an amateur sport still, but it is a very beneficial sport.
Yes, without a doubt. All right. So when we come back, the future of the private clubs and the membership model in the greater Milwaukee area continues to be an active part of the city's social and business landscape. There's a lot of legacy institutions, many of them evolving to meet members' needs. A lot of dollars and cents behind it all. I'm really interested in it. I'm sure you will be too. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. This is WTMJ, Commerce, Clubs, Corn, Community, live from the Bank 59 studios here at Wisconsin State Fair. We're going to talk about private membership clubs and kind of their future, a big active part of the social and business landscape in Milwaukee. Several established institutions really maintaining their presence, offering various amenities to their members. However, some of the clubs are facing some challenges adapting to times and new economics. The MAC downtown Milwaukee is one that really has evolved over the last couple of years. So Tom Hughes is the general manager at the MAC. Tom, I appreciate you taking time out of your day away from the club, getting out here at the fair.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's great to be at the fair.
Of course. All right. So how are private clubs continuing to adapt to kind of the changing social norms and member expectations and also, obviously, economic conditions?
Well, I would say that economic conditions haven't been a huge factor for us.
No?
We continue to see really high demand. With social norms, I think that there's really been a shift, for us at least. A private club historically is a place that is closed out to other people. It's kind of its own island in the middle of the city. And it's sort of this place where there's this perception where the elite gather and no one really knows what happens behind
right.
the doors.
Right.
And for us, what we found as we've grown a lot in the last couple of years, we did a $65 million renovation. We've added 600 members in the last 2.5-3 years. And what we found is that, you know, community engagement and a presence in the community, whether that's through supporting, we have fundraisers very often for nonprofits. We send our members out to volunteer in the community. We really want to be visible. We want to be a presence. We want to be more than just this place. You know, we want to build aspiration through visibility.
So how do you continue to diversify the revenue streams to really create that financial stability moving forward? Is it that, I'm just hearing you talk, it's almost like an inclusive and exclusive model at the same time that works together? Is that right?
That's actually pretty interesting. Yeah. So, you know, diversifying the revenue streams, I think, starts with diversifying the membership. You know, ultimately, our business is based on the community that we have that comes in every day. That's everything works because of that. So, you know, we've really tried to take time to be very thoughtful with our programming, with our offerings, with how we structure things to be very welcoming. And to build a club that's much more diverse, much younger. Our average age went down from 55 to 44.
Wow.
And it's a pretty happening and pretty busy place to the point that we're now trying to think of how we can expand out amenities within the building. As far as diversifying revenue streams, you know, I think that when I look at the MAC, especially our club, it's like a small town. I mean, it's we have 12 little businesses in the building. So we have apartments. We have a big event center, and the way that we're structured is different from a lot of private clubs, which allows us to have public events, which is really exciting. Again, another way to open the doors and invite people in. But then also, athletics is a big business for us. We, you know, we do a lot of revenue with massage. Kristen Uribe, we have one of the best masseuses in the city, and Clay Scott, our director of athletics, are really clever, really savvy business people, and we do really well with that. So it's just kind of like any business, you want to diversify. Yeah.
So are members making that choice between, oh, I'm going to join something like elite clubs versus the MAC versus the YMCA? From that fitness lens, what are you seeing? Are you looking, are people looking for that one-stop shop, or are they keeping their other memberships as well?
We're so unique. I mean, it's not a lot of people aren't really looking at the MAC if they're just looking for a gym. Because what we offer is so much more. We have a restaurant. We have a bar. We offer hotel rooms. We have a co-working space, a really nice happening co-working space. You know, it's a place where you can kind of have a one-stop shop for a lifestyle. And I think that our competition really isn't another club or another fitness center. You know, our fitness equipment is, we just did a $65 million renovation. We have the nicest fitness equipment probably in the state. So we don't really compete on that. It's more with other lifestyle choices.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff, I think part of it is kind of networking nowadays. I mean, the ability, I mean, the thing I love about the Mac, and I'm a member, is that when you're there, you run into 17 other people you know, and you can talk to them, and you can figure out whether it's in the gym, whether it's at the restaurant, whether it's in the working lounge. And I think nowadays, especially younger professionals who didn't have that for a couple of years, are looking for that. And the thing I found, even in a co-working space, is there are people there all day who come at 8 o'clock in the morning and probably don't leave till 4 o'clock in the afternoon because of that interaction.
Yeah.
People want that again.
Even if they have an office somewhere else, they're probably spending the money, or their company's spending the money, so you have that collision opportunities at the co-working space. And I'm big on that model for sure. But I want, when we come back, I want to get your thoughts on the continued adaptability of the MAC and other clubs. What some of the offerings look like, and then, you know, how are companies adapting to the model? Are they paying for their employees to be a part of private clubs? I know that's the way it was many years ago, but is that still continuing? Tom Hughes and Mark Cass join us, the business of sports, here on The Upswing. We are live from the Bank 5-9 studios here at the Wisconsin State Fair. Welcome back to The Upswing. We're broadcasting live at the Bank 5-9 studios here at the beautiful Wisconsin State Fair. Tom Hughes, general manager of the Milwaukee Athletic Club, and Mark Cass join us. So, Tom, what impact does kind of some of the declining membership issues at clubs like the University Club, kind of selling their space downtown Milwaukee, does that membership loss and kind of the maintenance issues of some of these legacy buildings, does that impact your model at all?
Yeah, of course. I mean, for us, we're growing very fast, so it's less of an issue for us specifically. But, you know, looking around in the market, I mean, that was really hard to see what happened with the U Club. That was an institution in our downtown for 125 years.
Yeah.
And such, I mean, that building was designed by John Russell Pope, who designed the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
I mean, the history that happens at a place like that, when that goes away, you'd never get that back. And you know, these buildings are, they're old, they're historic. There's a lot of things in them that are, you know, that have to be built custom. I mean, in the Elephant Room Bar, our coolers are made of wood. Like, they're the original wood coolers from the 40s. And to get parts for stuff like that, and just to upkeep elevators, HVAC units, all these kinds of things are expensive. And that's all behind the scenes. And, you know, what you have with members, it, you know, if you're not growing and you're not taking the initiative and providing really good value, really good programming, a really fun place to be, you don't grow. And if you don't grow, you can't fix the carpet. And if you can't fix the carpeting and fix the chairs and replace things, you can't get new members.
Right. And you don't want to be looking, as a member of a private club, you don't want to be looking at, oh my gosh, an assessment's coming to fund this old building that's beautiful. I was on the board of directors for years at the Wisconsin Club, past president there. And, you know, you look at different issues and how you spend, how you increase costs, and how you drive revenue. But let's just talk price a little bit. What are you looking at as you continue to increase membership and grow? What's that investment from a member look like, and kind of initiation fees and kind of all in?
Well, for us, it's a really nice time to get into the MAC, because as I said, we're growing really fast. So, you know, eventually we're going to be, probably in the next year, 2 years, we're probably going to be getting close to being on a wait list. And at that point, our initiation's going to go up a lot. You know, we did a very different model of how we did it. Rather than doing a member assessment, you know, we went through private equity, and we were able to raise a lot of money to do a really cool renovation of our building that with the traditional model just wouldn't have been possible. So again, it's thinking out of the box. How are you going to be competitive? Ultimately, though, the place needs to be a place where people have fun. And so we got to support that model where people can come out, where we can offer that great programming. And so, you know, our initiation ranges from $1,000 to $3,000 to get in, which is maybe 10% of what you'd pay at a country club. And it's $239 for the youngest bracket and $399 for the highest. But that initiation fee is probably eventually going to go to $7,000 to $9,000.
Yeah. Are you finding that the companies are making that investment on behalf of their employees the way they were maybe 10 years ago?
Well, there used to be tax breaks for that. And I think that, honestly, wisely, the government said, hey, like, that's not something that we're trying to do.
Right.
But what we're finding is we have enough individuals that want to make the choice to be a part of it. I mean, with our offering especially geared towards the younger middle-aged prime of life crowd, obviously we have legacy members that have been with us for 50 or 60 years. But we find that we've got a lot of people that just live downtown. We have people that retire, move to the Third Ward, and a pretty healthy amount of suburban folks that want to be a part of the club. And we do have, we have a lot of corporate memberships, but we haven't placed a lot of eggs in that basket.
Yeah. That family legacy at private clubs is strong.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, the thing I always think is cool about it is it's just not a club. You kind of think about it, the old days, you'd walk in, you'd go work out there, and there'd be, you know, kind of that's what you do. But now it's much more programming. There's movie nights, there's things in the bar, there's, you know, trips to the games, and there's, I mean, it's much more of a club. Kind of than you think of before. And I saw that at the Wisconsin Club, Jeff, but I really see it at the Mac. Is it's really trying to work with your customer, work with your clients to really have them there a lot more often.
It's all about building community. And here at the Bank 5-9 Studios at Wisconsin State Fair, it's about content, commerce, and corn.
And
get
cream,
out here.
Wait, cream puff. There's a C.
Cream
There's
puff.
Four
I was
C's.
For that
Come
final
on. All
C,
right.
Mark Cass.
All right.
See, this is the Upswing. You are listening to WTMJ.